afternoon, everybody. Welcome.
Hey there, how are you?
Good.
How are you?
I saw you on the first week we were talking. You had a big, you had a Wake Forest sweater on or something. Are you a Wake alum? Or are you a Wake fan?
I'm a Demon Deacon. Yeah.
Nice.
1964 to '68. I was a tennis player.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
That's great. I went to Wake as well.
Oh, did you really?
I did. Yeah, I had a great experience there, and yeah, I really enjoyed my time.
Oh, that's great.
I was there for some glory years of Wake Forest sports. So I started out, my freshman year was when Josh Howard was there and we won the ACC in basketball.
Oh, wow.
And then right after that, Chris Paul came in. So the Chris Paul years, and I was also there when we went to the Orange Bowl, with Riley Skinner as quarterback. So, saw some just really fun times in Wake Forest sports.
What about Tim Duncan?
He was there a little bit before my time. He was a little before me.
Yeah. I was there in the Lanny Watkins era.
Okay.
And so he was, let's see, who else? Anyway, it was a great time. And I've been involved recently. I was on the Demon Deacon board, for athletics, and I've been supporting. I support the they call them the Olympic sports now, and I don't think we've cut any so far, but everybody else is cutting all the quote Olympic sports. They're cutting swimming and cross country, tennis. So it's pretty sad right now.
What's going on.
So hopefully they don't do that. We built a nice tennis stadium there.
Yes. I haven't seen it, but I've heard people talk about it.
And I was there for the national championship when we won the national NCAA championship. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
So we've been, you know, we go back for a football game, every basketball game, and then we go back for the springs. You know, a couple times we've taken a week and just watched tennis, golf, and baseball. It's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're missing all of that for now.
Yeah.
Hopefully that it's going to all start up again and we'll get past all this. But anyway, so do we have everybody on?
So Stefan had been scheduled a travel today. He is out.
Travel day?
Yeah, he's had this planned for before we started this. And Charles, he was supposed to be on. I've just sent him a couple messages and haven't heard. So I apologize for that. I'm not sure where he is.
No, that's no problem. So did you meet with the people from Touchstone and do the PAR analysis?
We did. We did. And it was pretty impressive to see. We are actually going to run it again a couple different ways. I think we might have mentioned to you before, we're in the middle of some sort of transitions where one of our partners, or one of my partners has dropped off of the team completely. And so their numbers were still included.
Okay.
And then we have another partner, Peter, who, is still part of the team, but, we're not sure when he'll be retiring, but he's not really taking part in this training. So we want to gather some of his numbers just to think forward. But for the current moment, we want to kind of have it pared down to just Charles, Stefan, and myself's numbers. So we're getting those rerun, and then we've got another meeting with Touchstone to do that again.
Good, good. Okay. Yeah, because you guys are the only ones that show up on the on your website, as you know. Peter
right.
doesn't show up. And okay. Anyway,
hey guys, sorry, I'm late. I just had a call to client that ran over.
Okay, Charles, welcome. We just went through the PAR analysis, or at least who is how you. So are you gonna? Was it worthless?
No, I don't think it was worthless. I think it represented the enormous amount of work we're going to have in store for us. I think that was the big takeaway, at least for me.
All right. So what is the, what are the numbers?
Well, we went over a whole ton of numbers. What, which numbers?
Total number of accounts, total, you know, when it comes to the average or the mean and then the target, that would give you your absolute minimum and then your target minimum. I know you're going to take Peter's numbers out, but why don't we play with what we have if you have them. If you don't, that's fine, but.
Yeah. So let's see, the Broad Street Group. So number of households, we've got 395.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tyler, does that include Peter's?
I believe it. Well, that's what we discussed, but now that I mean, that doesn't seem to add up to what we thought, previously. I wonder if I pulled the new PAR. They were doing another one for us. Let's see if that's.
Hey, Tyler, does that include mine? Or just you guys?
Well, I thought I knew all this stuff, but, I'm not seeing on here where it says the exact numbers that were included in it. Let's see, the total assets were, $400 million. So that's $436 million. I think that's including you, Chuck. The average AUM is 1.1 million. Average revenue, 7,885. ROI, or ROA is 0.71.
And then the top 20% of that 400 households?
Yeah. So, the top 20%, oh gosh, where is that?
It's pretty clean. Pretty easy business to analyze, though. 400 households, 400 million.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
My apologies. I really did think I had this number right here. I was looking at it earlier, and now I can't seem to find it.
My guess is it's going to be 2.5 million.
That sounds about what we were talking about, but I.
It's okay. You can.
Well, I can kind of jump in real quick with a couple of quick, thoughts. So I don't know if, Robbie, you know this, but I'm in DC, right? So I sit separate from these guys and I have a separate part-time assistant.
Okay.
And so it does make our team a bit disjointed in how we operate. So I kind of operate in my own silo, even though I run the PM for the team. but I looked at everything, and so I have a slimmer book, so I'm probably at, I counted them about 70 clients. And if I carve out 10 as butlers, that's probably where I'm at currently. I think my goal is, you know, 75 clients max. And so it's more about, and I'll probably drop some of the ones that I have out of that 75. I think I've identified 5 to 10, and I'll just take out. My target minimum is going to be 1 million, based on the top 20 other than one large client. And I think my absolute minimum would be 500.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I came up with, at least on my end. And I definitely want to be a little slimmer too than the average, because I'm focused so much on the PM side, and just the bandwidth becomes an issue.
So I would, from a consultant's point of view, all right, I'm your consultant. My suggestion, particularly where you're not interested in large numbers of clients, you should definitely have your minimum at absolute minimum target 2.5 million, if not more.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So one of the things is to have the team decide what are our aspirations. You know, this is the math, but do we want to look like a private banking team, or do we want to be a mom and pop shop? Now, I'm exaggerating to make a point, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not a mom and pop shop. You're a, you know, work with high net worth families. But the question is, how do you want the public to perceive you? So do you want to be a concierge practice with ultra high net worth families, or do you want to be, you know, a good Main Street financial advisory team that works with lots of different people? So you create the brand, and the brand is determined by your minimum. I know that sounds crazy as a simplification, but, you know, we do all this analysis of what creates a brand and everything else, but you say so much when you declare your minimum that it makes everything else pale in comparison.
So I have a question related to that. So one of the things I thought about was, well, there'll be a number of clients that I want to keep that are definitely below my new target. So when I am talking to them about the Supernova, how do you describe that? Well, hey, yeah, you know, I'm grandfathering you in. You're fortunate. I mean, is that what it is?
Basically? Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. You want people to gulp a little bit when you describe what you're doing. We're starting a concierge practice, and our minimum fee is $10,000. But because you've been a great client, you've referred a lot of business to us, we're going to continue to charge you $5,000. Okay. So we're making an exception for you. And what they think then is, wow, that other account I have over at Brand X, maybe I better get that over here before he boots me out.
Okay.
Rob, I've got sort of a, kind of a big picture question for you as well. How much, of these things or these questions should we really be focused at as a team as a whole versus individually as members? Because the reality is myself and Charles and Steph are all in sort of different, places as far as the business goes. So do we need to be looking at, hey, as a team, these are our absolute minimums and target minimums? And even when we drill down into, you know, we're talking about target niches and those kind of different things on this week, but should the team have a niche, or does each individual partner have a niche? Does that make sense?
No, it's good conversation. It's good questions. The answer is it depends. It really does depend. And I would tell you the easy answer for me to give you is you should all have the same minimum. You should all be prospecting the same type of clients. You should all be going for the same size clients and so forth. So that when you bring one in, Stefan and everybody's really excited because it's a big client. That's the easy answer. That's the one I give most of the time. The other answer is, you should have the same minimums, but you may consider making a few more exceptions when you see potential, real potential, to get to that target. Okay? So, whereas Stefan probably wouldn't need bother, you can do it because you have time. When you're maxed out and you have no time, then you can't afford to take on people that don't pay you your minimum. So just think of it as a concierge practice, and you each have 100 clients in your each, and everybody gets charged $10,000. And now think about it, right? You've got a few slots in your practice, and you're only going to charge them $5,000. Well, what about the guys that are paying $10,000? What are they hear about? Why are you charging him $5,000 and you're charging me $10,000? I'm getting the same thing. You know, why don't you charge me $5,000? So that's the problem with trying to set different minimums and making exceptions. You know, friends and family is one thing, but when you start to open it up to others, then the question is, do you really have a minimum? And so that's the part where you guys have got to come to grips with this, you know, from a credibility point of view and a marketing point of view. What do you want to be when you grow up? And so you guys have got to kind of, I will tell you, I've got a guy in Indianapolis who I coach their team, but I spend most of the time on the younger guy because it's just worked out that way. He's a fabulous prospector. He brings in most of the new business, but some of it is lower than their minimums. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Because he's bringing in so much business. So, you know, I'm not going to tell him stop prospecting those other accounts. So it seems to work out okay. So anyway, that's my, you wouldn't have heard me say that 6 months ago, but I'm kind of thinking to myself, this guy's as good as they get, and this work is working for him. So maybe I need to be a little bit more flexible with you guys, you know, in terms of just keep in mind what you're doing and why you're doing it. And you're not, I mean, because in reality is if you've really got a great product, people will pay for it. It's just a matter that it's a little harder for you to get those clients. Right, you got to go through a few more because you got a higher minimum, but that doesn't mean you're not working on the right. You know, I don't know if you guys are fishermen or anything, but you want to fish where the big fish are. You know, when I go fishing out in Idaho, I can go and catch a lot of fish, right? Or I can go and catch a few really big ones. It's a different kind of fishing. So I won't go with a partner. I'll go by myself with my guide and we'll hunt for the big fish. And I'll get 3 fish that day versus getting 30 fish if I, you know, cast for everything and go for everything. So it's just a different business. You know, it's just a different way of doing things. So my suggestion is set your high minimums, target your high profile prospects, get everybody up to speed and go for it. And let's test it and see if it's how it's working and whether or not you need to make a few compromises along the way. Okay.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's easy when it's the CEO, right? And your minimum's, you know, 2 million or, yeah, 2.5 million. And the CEO of a company has got 800,000, but he's the CEO. Okay. He's going to exercise some options next year and you're going to be at 6 million. So that's an easy case. The easy one is $500,000 rollover. That's an easy case of no, because that one is all that you're going to get. You say, well, that's easy money. Yeah, but it takes time and it's filling a slot that could be filled by a $6 million client. So you want to say, it's like when I used to run offices, people would say, you know, I've got a producer from the competition that wants to come over and he's doing 400,000. He's a fifth quintiler and he's, you know, 30 years in the business and he'll fill the slot. And I'd say, no, you know, my minimum, I have a target. I want the average productivity to be 1 million in the office. I'd rather have an empty seat than I would have an average or below average FA fill in the slot. So I want top-notch guys because top-notch guys want to be around other top-notch guys. You don't want to fill it up with people that are not going to contribute. So that's the brain. That's the commitment to excellence that I want you to permeate your practice. And excellence includes having high minimums and then raising those minimums every year as your practice expands. That's also very hard. All right. But you'll get people. It's just a different business. It takes a little longer, but that just means you work hard. So anyway, other questions on min-max. Maximum, I like your maximum at 70 or 75 clients, Charles. That's a realistic, that's 4 a day. When you lay out the scheduler, you're going to see it's 5 a day if you have 100. It's 4 a day if you have 70. 4 a day is a lot better. So get rid of those 10 or 20 clients that aren't paying you and open yourselves up to bring in 20 clients that will pay you. So be tough on yourself in this round. Now I'm going to encourage Stefan to give you guys a lot more responsibility here. And that means more clients to service because he should. Now I don't know where you are in that transition, but wherever you are, I'm going to encourage it to happen sooner than later because that opens him up, which I assume he's the, you know, the rainmaker at this point. We want him to be making more rain because he's not going to have any problem getting the $3 million client.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I would just add that certainly is Stefan's strong point. The more time he's out on the golf course, the better off we are as a team for sure.
So if he had 50 clients, 50 big clients, theoretically, and he was prospecting half a day every day, how would that work in terms of bringing in new business?
Yeah, it'd be good.
Be really good, right?
Yeah, I mean, Stefan has a pretty great talent for getting in front of people and bringing in business. But I think he's worked so hard to build this mass of clients and watch his revenue number tick higher year after year that I think the whole slim down approach, you know, where you might take a little bit in the near term, even though it might only be for 6 months, is probably a challenge for him. That as your consultant, that's one thing maybe you might need to impress upon him. Because I think he's, thought about this for years, and I think we were kind of at a point where we're getting there, right? I feel like through the last couple of weeks, we're maybe making some more realistic progress or potential for progress than I've seen in a couple of years. But he's got to get over that hump, right? He's got to be willing to kind of give away clients, you know, let us handle them, even right. if he's giving up revenue in the near term, because it's going to mean more revenue for him later.
Right. Yeah, it shouldn't be a me or them kind of thing. If I keep all these clients and I get more revenues, it should be a, you know, it's our pool of money and
right.
everybody has their split and everybody, because in reality, if he's, if I mean, he's just not using his talent where best. I mean, this is normal. This is every team that's built with one person having really brought in the majority of the business, that's your rainmaker. That's your person that makes that's your growth engine for the company. And what they'll do is they'll hire somebody to cold call and bring in new business. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. You're going to be able to bring in more business in 1/8 the time. You should give away all administrative duties and all as much servicing as you can, and you focus on growing. And guess what? You'll double the business. And when you double the business, you make lots more. Because if he took 50 clients, I bet 70 clients, let's just say 70 clients, that would probably be 90% of his revenues. So he's not really giving up much. He's just getting a ton of time back. And that's what you want. That's where we want to go. So not that, you know, we're going to disclose everything, the plan, but that's the easy plan for me as a coach. And, you know, everybody obviously on the team thinks that's a great idea, Rob, but it is a great idea because you guys, now the key is for you to get skinny and stay skinny. So you don't go much beyond 70 clients. So you got to say, I got to be tough about this and get rid of 20 little guys. And the same with you, Tyler. You want to get rid of all the little guys. So you're opened up to handle the bigger clients. So everybody under 250, phew, goodbye. And I don't know what that does to your practice, but theoretically that would probably free up 40% of your time. I don't know. You have to tell me that. Under 250, how many clients are there?
Let me look. I do have that number. Hold on.
I probably have 15 to 20 out of my quote unquote 70.
There's your 20 clients.
Yeah. there's a handful where the guy is a CEO and he's got some stock options. So I'll keep him. But I
Right. They're the children of your best clients, or they're the CEO that is stringing you along. But other than that, goodbye. You know, it's just cleaning out the closet. You don't wear the suits anyway. It's hard to get rid of them, but it's going to make somebody else so happy. You know, you're not giving them away. You're reassigning to somebody that has more time for them.
Yeah. Now, I've got another wrinkle, though. So I do PM, discretionary portfolio management.
Right.
And most of the clients I do that for. And so reassigning them requires it to, if I would hand off full responsibility, that would require that to be a PM advisor, certified advisor, and to find someone younger who's PM certified is unlikely. So
do they need to be PM though with that kind of money?
No, yeah, not necessarily, but it's just been easier for me, right?
Right. But But so you can fix that. That's not, I mean, American Funds does a great job.
Yeah.
I'm up 18% in an American Funds account since, you know, I think since the beginning of the year. It's amazing, right? So come on. Does the client care? No. Yeah. All right. Too small a cup.
I think you
bring me a bigger issue.
Rob, I think you'll kind of cringe at this. These are slightly different numbers. And again, I'm not sure it has to do with how it all gets, what numbers are included, but out of 533, clients, there are 223 that are under 250.
Okay. Yay.
So those are the numbers that you gave me last week when we talked.
Yeah. Yeah. That's statement link groups. I was actually trying to find that. What percentage of that revenue does it do?
So how many clients was it? 250 or so?
It was 223 out of this 533.
Right.
That is including Peter's. I know that.
That was including Peter?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what percentage is that? It's almost 50% of the clients.
Almost 50%, right.
Yeah, and it's, I bet it's.
It's less than 5%.
Oh my God.
I bet. I'll find the number.
Percent of gross revenue. No, it's like 15% of gross revenue.
Is it 15?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's the 85, it's the 85-15 rule, not the 80-20 rule. Not quite. It's 50% of the clients.
Yeah.
But just think, you'd get back 50% of your time for 15% of your revenues. It's a good trade.
Yeah.
And you could do a buyout, you know, say a couple of years, let them pay you for that 15%. I don't recommend that. I'd rather see you make a clean break and get rid of the compliance issue and, you know, the compliance liability and all that. Cause if your name's on the statement, you own it when it comes to lawsuits. So it's just, you know, to me, it's not worth it, but you guys decide.
This brings up one of the questions I had. There's a lot of talk in your stuff about the stair step approach.
Yes.
And are you saying that we should find somebody right now that we already train in this to hand off all these small accounts to?
Ideally, right now it's not a big issue, right? Because $250,000 accounts, you know, don't need an awful lot of service.
Right.
But let's say that now your minimum is, we've been doing this 5 years and your minimum is now 5 million target and 2 million minimum and you're at your max and somebody comes up with $750,000 and you can't take them because you're at 100 clients and your minimum client, your smallest client's 1 million. So why would you take somebody for $750,000 unless they were the CEO? So you then have to assign that to somebody, that you value, you know, that is a good FA. And what if, let's just say let's take the reverse of that and the guy had $750,000 and you got $1 million rollover and you go, you know what? This guy can bring in 6 million. This one is a maxed out at 1 million. I'm going to reassign the 1 million. Okay. So you're going to give that to somebody. Now they've been getting 1242 now for 5 years and they love you and you got to give that to somebody that's going to give them what, quarterly or twice a year or something? No. So you got to give that to somebody that's doing Supernova or that person's going to leave the firm. So you want to have a team that might have a $500,000 minimum or $1 million minimum at that point that would accept that client. Say they have a $500,000 minimum and well, our million is the $1 million client. You give it to them. You want them to get 12-4-2. You want them to get rapid response. You want them to have to know how to do a financial plan. So do you need to train them? Hopefully not. Hopefully I train them. But you need to have another team. Theoretically, the stair step to the stars is that's why we like to coach an office, is that your minimum is $3 million. Somebody else's minimum is $1 million. The other guy's minimum is $500,000. So when a client comes in, you don't say no to them. You say not to us, but to this other team. This is going to be a good fit for you. And you hand carry them to the other team and they open the account and they're very happy. And you're happy because you know this team's going to give them good service. Now you say, why would I ever do that? That's so nice, but it's all crazy. It's because you don't have time. Okay. Time's the most valuable thing in the world. And you hope someday when they get a $25 million client, they bring it to you and you split the business or you help them out. So when you create a brand that is of real value, like with Charles and his PM business, assuming he does better than American Funds, he then can go, people are going to bring $5 million to you guys and say, manage this. And, we did this at my former firm, a lot. And guys were good at this, so we're going to talk about that, but I need to know more, of course, but yeah. So that's the answer. The stair step to the stars is a good question, and that's the answer. And that's, we had to deal with this. And of course, I've had to deal with it for years now. And I will tell you that there, I had a case where an FA left, was reassigned to a non-FA, non-supernova FA. And the guy got the non-supernova FA got a ACATS. Oh, the guy had retired. The first guy had retired. So it wasn't a conflict. Guy got an ACATS and he went back. The FA that got reassigned went back to the guy and asked him, why did you leave? And he said, well, Paul used to call me the first Tuesday of the month, every month. And when you didn't call me, I assumed you didn't care. And didn't want the business. So I moved. So once you give them supernova, you spoil the heck out of them. And they will, if they don't get it, they'll leave. So anyway, it's a good problem and a bad. So you got to make sure you take care of them when you reassign.
I guess more my question though is right now we've got all these clients, we're trying to slim
right.
The idea of trying to find somebody that's already doing what we're planning on doing.
Yeah, you're going to just give them to a good guy, a good gal, some good person that you trust and you like and will call them, and you don't have to give them 12-4-2, but they're going to give them good service.
Yeah.
At this point, you don't, I'm making an assumption, you don't have a standard of care that is as articulate or as comprehensive as Supernova.
Right.
And that's the same as this guy. He's got a standard of care, but it's just hard to articulate, but it's good. And the average person isn't upset by it. But as time goes on, you'll become more of a fanatic about every client gets called every month, because you'll see the benefits and you'll see how, the clients open up. Trust is doing what you say you're going to do consistently over time. And when people trust you more and more and more, they open up more and more and more, they consolidate more and more, and they tell you more about themselves. They give you more business, give you more referrals, and give you more transfers and assets. So it's an amazing process to watch. You'll all get through it. Now, the sooner you get to getting the clients in the system and calling them, the sooner you'll see the benefits of this. So you guys want to be starting doing this like immediately. Okay. So once you decide who you're going to keep, and you don't even have to decide that, you know, you're going to keep your top clients. You can start calling them and telling them about the service. Now you need to be able to articulate that. So you need to get your speech down, but you want to do it as soon as possible so that you can then start scheduling them so that they can start getting the benefits of this. I had one guy, you know, this happens almost in every case when we do this, not so much now, but last year it happened a lot. People would be calling and the client would say, wow, this sounds wonderful. I'm glad you're doing this, because if you weren't, I was going to move my client because I hadn't heard from you. So if that has any ring to it, you might want to, you know, get going as fast as possible in this process. Because they value this. The clients value this. I know you do, but they will value it even more. Okay. So what does your speech sound like? This is what it should sound like. Mr. Client or Mrs. Client. We've been analyzing our practice. You know, you've noticed that there's been some disruption in our team. We've analyzed our practice, and what we were concerned about is the following. We grew so fast that we were concerned that we were not going to be able to deliver the same client experience that we'd done in the past. So we hired a consultant and we analyzed the practice, and this is the conclusion of that analysis. This is our commitment to each and every client from now on. We are going to give multi-generational planning with full implementation of that planning process through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews of the plan, 2 of them in person, and we'll be giving you rapid response to your problems, 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. How does that sound? Now, when you're prospecting, you go, how does that compare to what you're getting now? When you do it to a client, they always go, wow, how are you going to be able to do that? And you go, because we're limiting our practice to less than 100 clients. And Charles, you'd go, I'm limiting my practice to less than 70 clients. Because that's where you're committing. Commitment to is, that's what you're going to do. That's what you're going to do. So, and they'll go, wow, am I one of them? And you go, yes, congratulations. You are a one of them. And that's when you adjust whatever relationship you had that isn't working in your favor. Okay. So if they weren't paying you properly, now's the time to make them pay properly, meaning they discounted because they came over from the competition or whatever. You raise your prices, you gain control of the relationship, meaning that's what we're going to do for you. And in return, all we ask is that you're going to be given a folder. There'll be an agenda for each meeting. There'll be a place for you to take notes. And what I'd ask is that you take notes. If you've got a market related issue, please call us. Otherwise, write it into the notes. Mm-hmm. And then when we talk monthly, bring it up at that point. We'll be sending you an agenda. If there's something that you want to talk about that's really important that's not on the agenda, please add it. And we'll add that to the agenda. So each call will have an agenda. We'll go through the agenda, and then I will send you an executive summary of what we discussed and agreed to. So I ask that you be prepared. Everything is by appointment. so that if you cannot be there for the appointment, please call and cancel like you would for any doctor's appointment. And when we both agree that we're going to be doing something, that will be on the agenda. And I would appreciate very much that if it's partly your responsibility that you clearly follow up on it. So this is like a boardroom responsibility. I always say that you're the CEO, Mr. Client, and I'm the CFO. So my job is to help you make better decisions. So I'll be giving you lots and lots of information. I'll be giving you lots of recommendations. But in the end, it's your decision. And we'll work very hard to help you make that process as easy as possible for you. Okay, so you see how you gain control of the situation? Instead of playing phone tag, you eliminate that. Instead of them calling all the time, you eliminate that. Instead of having an hour and a half meeting, you have a 50-minute meeting. So everything goes smoothly. Everything goes according to a structure. And they then respect you a lot and are willing, they're willing to pay you, and they respect you, and they will honor your appointments, and they will show up. Now, some people say, you don't have to call me that often. And so what you say is, we think that in the beginning, particularly, this is going to be very valuable. If after 6 months, you're not, you don't think this has value to you, then we'll adjust at that point. And those are always the people that want to keep you on the phone for an hour when you call them. Now, all your appointments are going to be on the hour, nothing on the half an hour. And next week, what we want you to do is to create your own perfect agenda. When do you want to call prospects? When do you want to call clients? Don't let them choose your office hours. You choose your office hours. Okay, if you want to work 2 days and have 3 days for prospecting, you jam all your calls into 2 days. So you can do it any way you want. You can work for 2 weeks and then have 2 weeks to prospect. And every month, every quarter, you have a 5-week month, and you can use that 5-week month to prospect or go on vacation or do whatever. So keep that in your calculator. When you're fit, so you're creating your ideal practice. And now's the time to do it. You'll never have a better chance. Once you schedule these people, yes, you can change them, but it becomes more difficult. I work Monday and Wednesday, and I jam all my calls into those 2 days. And they try and get me to work on Tuesday and Thursday and Friday, and I'll make an occasional exception, but pretty much that's it. Okay, those are my office hours. And once I fill up my practice, I'm done. I don't take any more clients. I've got some overflow, but that's the way it is. I told one client that I have one opening on Monday. If she wants it, you better make up your mind. And I wasn't BSing. That was true. So, you know, that worked. She closed. That, you know, 2 days she was back to me and signed up. So people value scarcity. You know, I could charge a lot more. I probably should, but that's not as important to me as my time. My time is the most important thing to me. And you'll find that as you get older, it becomes more and more valuable because you have less and less of it. All right, so you know what your homework is?
Figure out a schedule?
Yes. Memorize that pitch. Now, this is recorded, so you can play it over again. But memorize that pitch and then start to articulate it to your clients. You can adjust a few things, but the multi-generational planning with full implementation of the planning process through 12 scheduled appointments, that's the best way to say that. 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews of the plan, 2 of them in person, and rapid response to your problems, 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. when it's a prospect, how does that compare to what you're getting now? They always say, my God, I haven't heard from my guy in 6 months. This is amazing. How do you do that? So it's a prospecting tool. And we are out of time. We actually went over time again. I apologize for that, but I think we've got a lot to cover and you guys are asking good questions. So we'll try and keep it to 30 minutes. But in the beginning, there's a lot to cover. All right. Any final questions?
That's it.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.